You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 6th, 2011. This is episode 178, April Showers, Webmaster Resources. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your regular host, along with your other regular host, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you today from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And this weekend, I was excited to be in Wisconsin, walking on your ground over there.
You didn't stop by.
Nope, I was a little bit north of Milwaukee. I was up in Wautoma area at Camp Philip for a weekend of training for our vacation Bible school. We're going to use Camp Philip materials this year. So got to go to a few campfires and sing a few camp songs along the way, and it was a lot of fun.
Very nice. That's
nice,
great.
Little weekend getaway.
Yeah, I've been traveling as well. I was down in St. Louis for a while, visiting our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions, a part of Concordia Publishing House. They've got an exciting new project called Church 360 that they're going to be launching pretty soon. That's a online version of Shepherd Staff, which is very exciting. It's not an apples for apples kind of a thing, but I think we'll have some appeal for a lot of churches. It's a little bit more simplified than Shepherd Staff, but the fact that it's online makes a big difference, I think. So there's a lot of things that they can do there. It looks nice, and I think it'll be useful. So I'll probably share more as we go along with that. And then I was in Chicago for a little bit, and now I'm finally back home in Milwaukee. In the comfy confines of the Wells Tech Studios. So, and the show topic is kind of an interesting one because we've decided that there is enough resources that maybe we could do a whole month of resources for different types of technology folks. So, for instance, today we're going to talk about webmasters. And we've kind of given it a theme related to the weather.
That's right. We're going to shower you with April showers for webmasters. And, you know, we talk about a lot of webmaster resources we have for the past 177 shows. Mm-hmm. And we thought this would be a good opportunity to kind of pull it together and give you a more complete picture rather than the sprinkling that we give you all throughout the shows, that we would just lay it on heavy today and give you a big picture of webmaster resources. And, you know, anybody can build a website these days, Martin, but I'm not sure that anybody can do it well. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully with the combination of these resources that we're going to point you to today, you'll find some things to either start your website or improve your existing website.
You know, back in the day, and I'm only talking like a few years ago, being a webmaster was fairly straightforward. You know, there were only a few tools that you could use, and it was mostly a 1.0 experience where you posted content, the web visitor came and read your content, and that was it. Now it's a lot more complicated, and there are many, many more resources, and you have Web 2.0 tools, you have embedding, you have different hosting options, you have search engine optimization, you have different kinds of calendars and discussion boards, and the list is endless. And we've talked about probably most of the resources we're going to talk about today in previous shows. So we thought maybe just bringing them all together, making a little bit of sense of them, and I'm hoping that what comes out of, you know, our April Showers series is just four nice collections of resources that particular person could go to and say, hey, this is what's available on Wells Tech that meets a particular need or addresses a particular topic, and in this case, maintaining a website.
So jumping right into that topic, Martin, I guess anytime I'm talking to someone about their website, there's really two sides to web development, in my mind at least, and you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but I always think of the planning and the content side. Uh-huh. You know, why is it that you're having a website, and what kind of goals do you want to achieve with that website, and what kind of content are you going to put on the website to achieve those goals? And that's the hard part, actually, for me. That's where uh-huh. the brain work really comes into play. And beyond that, the other side of it is the mechanics of doing the website and doing it well. Uh-huh. You know, what platform do you build it on? What kind of resources do you use to do that? And how do you do it in a very professional way? Yep. Graphics and audio, video, and all of those different mechanical kind of things are the other side of the picture. So,
you and I have kind of taken a similar approach, because you do seminars and workshops on this, and I do as well. And we've taken each a different letter of the alphabet and tried to break out the different dynamics or different phases of website planning and site design. You pick the 5 W's, I have the 5 C's, so maybe we should start there.
Sure. And again, this kind of addresses the planning side of it, mm-hmm. the why, the who, the what, and are those W's that that for me say, you know, what are we doing this for and how, and that kind of thing that is the planning side mm-hmm. of it, the putting on your thinking cap, the really contemplating who the audience is and what it is they're looking for when they come to your website.
Mm-hmm. And then you have where and when.
The where and when, yeah, kind of address the mechanical side of it, the platform, how often you're going to update it, what kind of systems you're going to put in place to easily do those updates and keep the site professional and dynamic.
Yep. Yours are a lot easier to remember than mine. I did a seminar just last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, I guess it was, up in Appleton, Wisconsin. And it kind of struck me that there are really these 5 stages in almost every evolution of a site, and it all begins with that planning stage, as you talked about, and that's what I call the contemplation stage, where you're just thinking. And there's nothing wrong with just thinking a lot before you actually make some decisions about, you know, hosting and content and a lot of those things. You really have to, in your own mind, decide this is a good thing to do. And also determine who's going to do it, you know, some of your W's, and why you're going to do it in the first place. You know, does it make sense? Are we committed to this? And really make a commitment to yourself saying, hey, this is a worthwhile effort. Then I talk about construction, so that's the nuts and bolts of building it, selecting a web host. Are you going to use WordPress, Final Web, you know, whatever it is. Then the content side, or content coordination, not just what kind of content, but who is going to manage that content. Are you going to have a decentralized or a centralized model? So you're going to let more people in on the fun and ask them to maintain the site, or is it going to be centrally managed? Then the collection phase, where you're actually interacting with the user. So what kind of information do you want the user to provide to you? Are you going to use forms? Are you going to collect information? If so, then you need a privacy policy. Are you going to engage in a conversation? So that could be Facebook style or discussion board style. And then finally, the last C is calibration, where you're just kind of measuring how you're doing and then tweaking to make sure that all that energy you put in, all that time and maybe even money that you put into your website, was it worth it? So it's more of a stewardship question. So you're constantly saying, how many visitors did we have? What areas of the site seem to be popular? Ask the why question, you know, why was that? And then make tweaks along the way. So it does have to be somewhat of a structured approach to truly, I think, have a successful experience on the web.
And probably worth mentioning at this point, Martin, is the fact that this show in particular is going to have very extensive show notes on our Wells Tech website, wellstech.wells.net. And right off the bat, we'll be sharing both those presentations with you. So if you want to look through those two presentations, you're certainly invited to do that with the links that we provide. In addition, Martin, you actually wrote a paper, Websites and Missions, and Reaching Out in a Digital World. And I think that's a good read for anybody who's on the front end of this planning process to spend a little time. It's not too lengthy. They can certainly knock it out in an afternoons of reading, and I think they'll get a lot of direction along those same lines there.
You had a lot of fun putting that together, and its primary focus is creating an evangelistic website, a website that is primarily for the visitor or the unchurched person. So it does come at it from that perspective, but there's a whole, obviously, another dynamic about internal communications that have to be addressed probably on every congregation website, that, you know, how do you communicate to your members as well as your visitors? So that's something that always needs to kind of play into your planning process.
So kind of going back to that whole two-pronged approach to web development, the planning is there, contained in these presentations and that document. That's going to address those planning questions and things, but it's really the work that you put in on that part that's going to lead to the success of your website. All the rest of the things we're going to share in this conversation are more on the mechanics side, but you really do need to not skip over that point where you do that contemplation, as you put it, and, you know, put the time in on your purpose and goals for your site.
Even as specific as domain name selection is really critical. And I think a lot of websites are sometimes burdened by their domain rather than helped by it. If you've got a good domain, it can really serve a lot of good purposes for you, not to mention it being memorable, but also easy to attach to an email so that you've got, or as your email address, so that you can use it and you're proud to use it, and it kind of stands for your spot on the web. So that even those kinds of details need to be thought through and carefully selected. Do you use a .com or a .org or a .net? Address those kinds of things are really important decisions, and you can always change things up if you really feel a need or see a big need to make some changes there. Now is the time to do it and just move forward with the good strategy.
And we will include a link in the show notes to one place to look up the availability of domain names. So I know as we're launching a new website, we kind of park ourselves on the whois.com website and just type in a bunch of domain names and look at, what's taken already and what the possibilities are. So that's a good starting point as you're doing that kind of brainstorming, just to have a website up and be testing out the availability.
Yep. In this section of the show notes, we'll also put some tools that would be helpful. Obviously, some blogs that'll talk about good design and good strategies for web layout. I find it always real helpful when you're in the web development stage, or even in the planning stage. How is this going to all come together? Is just to do, you know, line drawings, or what are called wireframes, and we've got a couple tools there that'll help you do that, where you just drag content around, whether this should be, this is where our calendar will live, and this is where our, you know, an excerpt of our blog will live, and we're going to put daily devotions over here, and we're going to put kind of a promotional area over here, and we're going to put a picture here. That kind of thinking, even though some tools give you templates for it, like Final Web and WordPress and those kinds of things, you still have a lot of flexibility even within those templates to determine where is your information going to go. One thing I emphasized with my workshop a couple weekends ago was the prioritization of content and where the premium content should live on your page. The most important spot on your website's homepage is probably that upper left area. Since we live in the world, at least in our area, where you read top to bottom and left to right, that's where the eye naturally goes. So things like that need to go into that contemplation stage where you're thinking about laying this stuff out and what to put where. So, again, attention to detail is really important at this point.
Very good. We'll also include links for just some kind of global reference material. We have a link for the Google Webmaster Area, which is a really excellent resource.
Yep.
That Google's put together. And another one, a PDF document that I found that's available for download. I think it's about a 350-page PDF document called the Web Book. And it's a pretty broad look at all the different components of putting together a website.
I've not seen that. Is that a Google thing, or where does that come from?
It isn't. It's something I had tagged, and we had talked about in a past podcast, and so I just kind of dug through some of our old notes and things and came across that. So it looks to be very well done, though, and very encompassing of the whole process. So I think it's potentially a worthwhile resource for our listeners.
Good. Very good.
And then finally, we want to give you some basics to help you get started with the actual mechanics of coding a website. And for this, we're primarily going to turn to the W3 folks.
Mm-hmm.
And W3 is basically a coding standard, and they have their own tutorials associated with it, W3schools.com. And you can find tutorials for HTML, beginning and advanced, with lots of examples and resources and things. They also have a whole series on CSS, or cascading style sheets, and the coding associated with those. And it's a really neat interactive way to learn, because they have these nifty code boxes where you can actually, I'm not sure how they do that, maybe with Java or something, you can interact with the code right there on the screen and see the results of it. So a very good way to experiment with code and learn the basics. And even if you're going to use what we call a WYSIWYG, or what you see is what you get, text editor, which is very prevalent across many of the content management systems today, even behind the scenes is that HTML source code with those text editors. So you would be able to look at the HTML and tweak things in the coding if you have a basic understanding of how the HTML works.
This is probably an area that scares most of the beginning webmasters more than anything else, because it's a whole different world, you know, this whole coding thing, a different language, and a very precise thing that if you don't do it exactly right, things go horribly wrong, or can go horribly wrong. But it's probably one of those necessary evils if you really want to have your website looking its best, and we certainly want that you're going to have to learn a little bit of HTML and CSS to make sure that things are nice and tidy and displaying correctly. Even looking at embed code, which is a real simple process, which we're not going to get into here on this show, but any kind of embedding video or audio or slideshows, those kinds of things, you really have to know a little bit about how that works behind the scenes. So these resources are excellent. Some start at the very beginning, some start in the middle, some start at the end for more of the advanced users. Any webmaster who's played a lot with this recognizes the power that's available with that, and many of the things that you can do if you know a little bit of HTML and CSS coding, real helpful to get comfortable with. So if you're just starting out, don't be afraid to jump in. It isn't as hard as it looks. It is logical at many points in the process, so it's important to just start someplace and play around with it and see what kind of results you can get.
Yep. Take heart. If I can do it, anybody can. So I remember back in the day, Martin, where everything was HTML, and you know, I did a lot of faking my way through, because once you can at least look at it and not be too intimidated, you can pick out and make little minor changes to it without having to know the big picture. You know, just being able to zero in on the areas that you want to touch.
And I remember the days of what I call table hell. where you had tables inside of tables and cells inside of cells, and it was you really had to it gave you a headache if you got a little bit too detailed there, and just one little mistake would do it for you. Now there's lots of tools that help you do that, so I think we're on the upswing of that whole of the coding side. Some of these tools really help that too. So
absolutely. So that should really transition us well from the planning stage and the basics of coding into actually coming up with a website. Where do you host it, and you know, what are the possibilities there?
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually dedicated shows in the past to looking at different content management systems. Everything, like you said, from Final Web to WordPress, Drupal. I think we've looked at Joomla and Mambo before and things mm-hmm. like that. And I think really those Drupal and WordPress and Final Web have kind of emerged as the favorites for the congregations and schools that we see mm-hmm. with their websites out there today. And then there are others who maybe want to host their own thing and do their own thing. And Martin, we've talked before about different hosting providers. DreamHost is one that offers free hosting to nonprofit organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And SiteGround is another one with affordable hosting. Boy, there's a million of them out there. But, you know, look around and look for good deals and make sure you capitalize on the fact that you're a nonprofit and potentially you can get some really cheap hosting with domain names included and things like
that.
Yeah,
one thing to look at with those hosting providers, if you're not, you know, a real tech guru, make sure you look for hosting providers that have kind of a one-click install of different services. I know DreamHost does that. I think the one you mentioned, SiteGround, does that.
Yes.
Where if you want to launch a Drupal site or a WordPress site or a Moodle site, we've talked about that in the past as well, you just click the button and it basically does the install work for you. You have to maintain the site and apply patches and those kinds of things, but sometimes those are automated as well. But unless you are very comfortable with file structures and FTPing different packages up to the web and launching those from a command line or whatever, it's important to find a host that does that. And fortunately, a lot of them do that. If you're going that route, if you're not going with the traditional, let's say, Final Web experience where it's all set up for you, if you want to do the kind of do your own thing, you know, hosting provider that provides those one-click installs is pretty valuable.
You talked about knowing about FTP and things. You also have to know enough about MySQL to set up MySQL tables
yep.
and things like
if
that.
If you're doing
it can
a CMS,
little,
right.
A little hairy when you get into mm-hmm. that host your own stuff.
But you get more flexibility, too.
That's absolutely right. One nice kind of middle ground that I've found is WordPress.com, which is basically a hosted WordPress site where they do the installs and the maintenance for you, but you don't have control over your domain name. So mm-hmm. maybe your domain name is mychurch.wordpress.com, but they do offer for a fee the ability to set a domain name for
and it's
your
pretty
hosted.
Cheap. It's like $25 or something like
yeah.
that a year.
So you know, you kind of get the best of both worlds. You're using their hosting and everything. You don't have the flexibility to do things on your domain that you would if you hosted it yourself, though. So
mm-hmm.
Just some give and take there. Another option for intranet type things is to use a Google site. And
right.
we've talked before with Pastor Rob Gunther, who used to serve at Gethsemane, maybe in North Carolina or somewhere like that. And they have a really extensive Google site for their intranet or internal communications for their congregation. And we'll have a link in the show notes to that so you can see an example of that. Google sites are free to set up, and you can make them private by requiring or sharing them just with certain members of your congregation, for instance, via their Google accounts.
Mm-hmm. Another tool that you brought up that you don't have listed here, and maybe it's later on in the notes here, is tableproject.org. That is an intranet, kind of a social network site that allows plugins like Dropbox, so you have some flexibility there too. And that is kind of a plug and play. You just sign up and go. So if that's your strategy, then maybe that's something to consider as well. I think that's free as well, right?
It is, and it allows you to have kind of that social feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a lot like Facebook, so you can interact with each other. You can have groups around
yep.
Prayer groups or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of possibilities there as well.
Shall we move on to the three-letter acronym SEO, three little letters, but they mean a big, they make a big difference, and that's search engine optimization. Essentially, that's how you get found on the internet. I don't know about you, Sally, but when I look at the stats for our PeaceHartford.org site, a pretty decent percentage of our traffic comes from Google searches. And we know this through Google Analytics, and Google Analytics allows you to even see how people are finding your site, what search terms they're entering to actually make their way to your site. And search engine optimization is a really complicated but critical part of maintaining a website, just making sure that once you've hung your shingle out, so to speak, people drive past and people stop in.
Absolutely. You can have the greatest site in the world, but if nobody's there to enjoy it with you, then it's kind of not worth the effort.
So, right.
You definitely want to be looking at those analytics. We both are big fans of Google Analytics. Google Analytics is integrated with the Final Web product and with many other web hosting resources as well. It's easy to do and gives you more information than you possibly could wrap
right.
your brain around, basically,
right.
Which is one reason why I'm going to include a link in the show notes to a Google Analytics cheat sheet, because sometimes it needs maybe a little more explanation than what you're getting there on the screen.
Yep.
What should I be looking at? What's important? And what are these numbers telling me exactly? So, good stuff.
So pay attention to that. Our next category is probably one of the most critical, especially for internal communications on a website, and that's the church calendar.
Oh yeah, everything in our church revolves around dates and times mm-hmm. and when everybody's going to meet and what kind of things we're planning and all of that. And
mm-hmm.
and for our church here at in Sleepy Eye, we use Google Calendar to meet those needs. Google Calendar has the flexibility of being able to share with different people so that you can divvy up the updates of the calendar, so all of our staff has access to our church and school calendar. And then it also has the ability for our members to embed or grab a copy of, basically, mm-hmm. the Google Calendar and put it on their own Google Calendar very easily. So it's on our website. It's also in our personal Google Calendars integrated there. And we have that sharing ability so that the people that need to have access to it and can make updates to it when they need it.
Right.
So lots of flexibility there with Google Calendar.
And we've talked in the past about other products that might work well. I know some churches use My Church Events. I think it's mychurchevents.com. which works well. That can be embedded, and a lot of functionality there where you can do some filtering. You can have separate calendars for different groups, whether it be the church or the school or the youth group or whatever. So all kinds of options, and we'll put
somebody
a link.
Somebody actually just wrote me recently about a new one I hadn't heard of until a week or two ago called Keep and Share. KeepandShare.com does the same kind of thing as Google Calendar, but what they were excited about was it could import their Google Calendar and print it without cutting things off on the edge, which is a kind of a shortcoming of Google Calendar at this point, being able to do word wrap and things so you get a nice printout to include in your print newsletter, for instance. And so they found this Keep and Share to be a good solution for that. We actually, here in Sleepy Eye, are using our own kind of homemade solution to print our calendar, and it's working real well for us as well. So we're, you have to kind of come up with solutions for those things.
Yeah, I'm just on the Keep and Share site. It looks interesting. I have not played with it at all, but it's not just sharing of calendars, but files and photos online as well. So I'm going to look into this a little bit more. It looks like maybe an intranet-y kind of a solution that might be helpful for congregations to consider. They've been around for a while, too. It looks like since 2004 they've been up, so they've got a little bit of a history.
Very good. So we'll be keeping an eye on that site and see if it can serve our purposes mm-hmm. well as well. So a couple of calendar solutions for you. A big component of your website, our next category, is graphics.
Mm-hmm.
You want your website to be visually appealing. And, you know, Martin, I'm just thinking we didn't even talk about color schemes in this mind map, but color schemes go hand in hand with your graphics layout as well.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically on graphics, it's important to use imagery and things that are freely shareable. So you can't just go out and find an image on the web and put it on your own website. You have to have permissions. You may have to pay for the imagery to include in your website. We have a lot of links that we shared in a show not that long ago when we were talking about newsletters, where mm-hmm. we shared a lot of links to free open source kind of public domain imagery that's available out on the web for a fee or for no fee. And so we want to include those links in this show as well.
Yep. Yeah, there's all kinds of categories here. We have photography, we have clip art, we have just the stock images that you can buy, or free resources that you can consume. But then also there's a whole tool set of things where you could edit those or edit your own to size, and that's an important part of putting stuff up on the web, sizing them appropriately so it's a quick download and a quick display. We've talked about Picnic and Aviary. Both of those are awesome tools, free to use, and just a goldmine of tools that you could use to do all kinds of editing, not just resizing, but cropping, color correction, those kinds of things.
I like to be able to add text, especially right. If I'm going to use the imagery for a banner on my website,
yep.
maybe text to connect it to some page on my website or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both of those tools are Web 2.0 tools that you use on the web. You don't have to download any software locally, but you have all this capability and you can have it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, once you have a collection of photos that you want to share, we like to recommend Flickr as a great place to host collections of photos. And what's neat about Flickr is you can put the collections into sets. That's a Flickr term of grouping mm-hmm. together a collection of photos. And you can make a slideshow of those that you can embed on your own website. We've done that on our website. And so a couple of benefits there. You don't have to use your own domain storage to host all your pictures. Flickr will allow you to store them out there for free, and then you get the benefit of being able to have this professional looking slideshow of your images embedded on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So a great way to share imagery with Flickr.
So we've talked about still images, but all the rage now, Sally, are moving pictures and the video side of things, and there's an equal amount of online tools that are really helpful there. First of all, just the raw storage. We've recommended Vimeo in the past. That's the one site that the Synod uses for all of our videos that we put on Streams Media. The one reason we really went with Vimeo versus a YouTube, which is also a choice that you could make, is just the length of the videos can be longer on Vimeo. You can do HD, and for pretty cheap annual cost, I think it's like $65, something like that, you get the kind of a premium package and the ability to upload a number of more bigger files and also more of them in a particular week or month. So Vimeo is a great solution for that kind of stuff. And then you can always embed that stuff on your website too, just like you can with YouTube.
Yep, and one thing that I'm going to dig up for these show notes is the link to the Wells group on
right.
Vimeo, because we do have a group of congregations that are using
Vimeo.
I'd
forgotten about that, yeah.
And we can share that, and if you're using Vimeo as well, then you can ask to be a member of that group. And then we have this kind of melting pot of ideas that other people are using Vimeo for. So
mm-hmm.
you see a kind of a group look at the uses of Vimeo by Wells congregations and schools.
Yep. And then there is a whole suite of tools about creation or editing of videos. One of your favorite tools for screen capture is Jing. And also Animoto, we've talked about in the past, which was a pick of the week not too long ago, which allows the upload of still images with music, and it just kind of makes a nice flowing, what would you call it?
It's like a photo slideshow, but,
it is, but
it's much more than that.
Yeah, you'd have to see
it. Just have a lot of motion.
Yeah, you'd have
with
to really
it.
See it to understand how cool it could be.
That's right. I'm a fan of flip camera. If you're looking for a way to just take some quick video in your congregation and school, you just can't get any easier than a flip camera, and also very affordable. They hold up to an hour of data, I believe, and you just plug it in with your USB port and get even HD quality video that you can easily, it's integrated with YouTube, easily upload to the web very quickly. And you can mash together your different video clips into a longer video if you want to do it that way. And we gave this one to our kids in our elementary school and let them use it, and they were all over how to do flip camera videos very quickly, and got some really neat results from that. So if you're just looking for an easy way to shoot some video, I think a flip camera is a great way to do that. If you want to take it to the next step and actually have a more full-featured video editing software where you can bring in different clips, maybe music for the background, add title slides, all kinds of things like that, get real a lot of finesse with your video creation. There are tools out there like Camtasia Studio. I know Pinnacle is known for having great video editing software. And I just recently heard about Lightworks, which is a free open source video editor. I read a real positive review on the Lifehacker blog about Lightworks. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a free video editor, that might be the way to go.
Okay. And last but not least, we should probably talk about podcasting. And all those audio files.
Yep. And our favorite tool, free tool at least, for editing and creating audio is Audacity. Mm-hmm. I think it's got a really good reputation over time. Many people are using it. You can do all kinds of effects and have multiple tracks and merge them into an MP3 file, which is the best standard format for sharing audio-only files. You can even host your podcast for free on a website called Podbean, and I'm sure there's probably others out there as well, but it's so that you don't even have to tie up your own website with the hosting of a podcast. There's ways to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So lots of options for your website.
All right. Again, all these resources will be put in one nice little package for you on wellstech.wells.net. And if you are a webmaster or know one, make sure that you're either checking this out or communicating this, that these resources are available. Again, these have come to us over time. Some of these we dug up in relation to prep for this show, but I think in general, these cover the major categories that I think would be helpful to anybody who is responsible for maintaining a web presence for their church or school or their organization. So
we'd love to hear from our listeners if they have a favorite web creation tool that we didn't mention on today's show. We'd like to hear about it and add it to our list as well. So please share your favorites, especially if we didn't make mention of them today.
Yep. Okay. Ministry resources.
Well, we heard from Pastor Tim Wagner, who sent us a link to Bible Glow Lite. Now that we have the Bible Glow upgrade, it came out a week or so ago, we're understanding more about their new structure. And what Bible Glow has done is that they've made a light version available for free. So can't argue with the pricing there. You can set up your own Bible Glow, and along for the ride is the 2010 New International Version of the Bible. So as you download and install this, you're getting the NIV version of the Bible, the newest release, with the software. Not all of the functionality is available in the Lite version, but it does give you enough to get a feel for the software and to use the NIV. And if you're so inclined, then you can easily upgrade to what they call their premium version now, which is what Bible Glow used to be. The pay-for version is now titled the premium version.
Right.
And so, again, if you want to see it in action, if you want to install it on your iPad and try it out on that type of interface, you can go for the Bible Glow Lite, and we'll have a link in the show notes to being able to download that.
Yeah, Sally, both you and I got an evaluation copy, and we'll be looking at that and maybe doing a review a little bit later once we have a chance to see what's the latest and greatest with this. So we were impressed, obviously, when it first came out. We had the founder on the show, Nelson Sabo, and that was a great interview, and we're looking forward to seeing where this goes. I think it's an interesting concept, and I think useful for pastors in Bible class settings, especially where they can bring, you know, some of these concepts to life with some imagery, or there's some virtual tours, there's some lots of additional resources that could be added, which would enrich the Bible study experience.
And, you know, for us, our computer that we use for Bible class isn't probably the top of the line, you know, earth-shattering computer that maybe could handle all the multimedia that comes along for the ride with Bible Glow.
Yep.
But the ability to have it on your iPad, and the fact that the iPad can be tied to your projection now, really kind of unlocks that for us. If you have an iPad and it has the power to run Bible Glow without any problems or hitches, obviously you're going to be able to share that a lot easier with your projection and stuff.
Yep.
Now.
I have not installed that yet, but I plan to do that and see how that goes. Now, I don't have the iPad 2, which I think has that projection capabilities. The iPad 1, I believe, has to be built into the app. So we'll see if Bible Glow did build that in and see how that works.
Okay. I'll be anxious to hear your review.
Yep. And maybe the other resource that we should, as we're, you know, crunched on time already, we've been a little gabby today, Sally, is just a little bit of news about Facebook. Facebook Questions for Pages is available. Questions is essentially an app that you can add to your Facebook page, which if congregations are doing Facebook, they should probably have a page, not a profile. Questions basically allow you to poll or ask questions of your friends, of those people who have liked your page. So you can do either a general question and solicit response, or you can even do a multiple choice and do some polling and surveying, which is always good in a congregational context where you're kind of getting the flavor of where your members are at in a particular topic. Could be Bible study related, could be church policy related, could be program related, all kinds of ways that you could use this on your Facebook page. So that's good news.
Yeah, I see a need to test this out on the Wells Tech Facebook
page.
Yeah,
we could do that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll throw a question out there. If you like our Wells Tech page, or even if you don't, you should go and like our Wells Tech page and answer our question. We'll come up with something creative to ask you, like, I don't know, Packers versus Vikings. Is that creative enough? We'll come up with something better than that.
We have 202 people on that page, so we got a nice little group there. So we'd love to have you if you're not on it. So facebook.com/WellsTech.
Absolutely. Time for our picks of the week.
It is. Forward.
I will point you to a blog post I read recently, Control Your Interactive Whiteboard from Your iPad. And again, we're probably talking iPad 2 with that ability to hook to your projection. Kind of struck a chord with me. They point you to a couple of different apps, one called Splashtop Remote Desktop and another Air Mouse. If you aren't interested in buying apps, I think you could actually use TeamViewer, which is a free app, and actually log into the computer that's hooked to the whiteboard and then have the whiteboard there on your iPad and be able to control it from your iPad. So lots of possibilities. Maybe it would work with the iPad 1 without being tethered to the projection now that I think about it. So I just like kind of extending and mashing up these different technologies, and the concept seemed exciting to me. I thought it was worth turning our listeners on to, especially if they're iPad in the classroom kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Which is becoming more and more prevalent. So
yes,
good stuff. My pick is, and we didn't mention this in our webmaster April shower section, but there is a live event component to a lot of people's website these days, and that's the ability to stream the service or to stream the sermon, whatever your choice is, which you do at your congregation, Sally, right? You stream every Sunday.
We do.
And you use Ustream.tv, I believe. The one that I'm going to recommend, and I've been doing some research on this for the Synod, because we do some streaming. We do call services, graduations, choral fests, those kinds of things. And some of those have pretty big audiences. And we're not overly pleased with our current provider, which is a company that we have to buy, you know, buy per gigabyte, and we have to kind of predict how much we're going to use, and it just is not a great model that's working very well for us. So I did kind of a hunt, and I looked at Ustream, I looked at Stickcam, I looked at all the players out there, and the one that I really kind of settled on and I think we'll go with is a company called Livestream. It used to be Mogulus. They've renamed it, and I think they've got probably one of the better packages out there, Livestream.com, where it works very similarly to Ustream. The free version is ad-supported, as they say, and you can have up to 50 viewers, I believe, with that ad-supported version. But the tools that they make available to do the streaming, I think, are superior to some of the other platforms, where you can do things like picture-in-picture, screen sharing, streaming your own videos or audio. You can have playlists that you can put together and have kind of a live channel running all the time of just pieced together previous storyboards, they call them. So you could have a live channel constantly available on your site that they could tune into. SD quality on the free level, but if you bump up to the next one, then you get HD quality. What I'm actually doing at the Synod level is exploring kind of their premium package and seeing if there are interested parties out there who are also streaming that maybe want an ad-free experience. So the way this package is working out, and I'm just exploring who's interested at this point. I'm approaching our Synod schools and our Area Lutheran High schools at this point, but if congregations are interested, that would certainly be acceptable as well. For 10 channels, they call them premium channels, the cost would be per channel $70. So if a congregation would be interested, that's what they'd be signing up for. It's about $70 a month for what I believe would work out to about 1,500 viewer hours. They do it by viewer hours, not by gigabyte, which is better. I think it's a little bit easier to understand. So you could have 1,500 viewer hours included per month, and 100 gigabytes of storage. So you could both store recorded live streams, but you could also upload your own videos as well in that amount. And so right now I'm just exploring that with different congregations. I've had a lot of interest, and hopefully I can put together 10 interested parties and go with this package, because it's $70 a month for ad-free. That's a pretty good deal. That's better than it. And Livestream was the only one that was able to give us charity pricing. I talked to Ustream. They don't have anything like that, and some of the others really don't offer any discounts for charity. So this was the only one that really provided that. It brought the price down quite a bit. But the studio package that comes with it is really easy to use, and I think that's important, especially when you're dealing with volunteers who are doing this, who are trying to manage this and switch cameras and all that stuff. So Livestream is my pick of the week, and if you are interested in, you know, kind of this package deal at that price point, certainly let me know, and I'll get you some more information.
That sounds really exciting, Martin. Lots of possibilities there. Yep. You mentioned that we Livestream here. I wanted to just put in a quick plug for our Southwest Area Lutheran Chorale. We're going to have a concert Sunday night at our church, and closing with the Hallelujah Chorus. So I'm very excited about that. We'll be live streaming it at 7 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th of April.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
Very nice.
It should be a lot of fun. So moving on, make a quick mention of our Final Web for Teachers and Final Web for Dummies classes that are coming up this summer. And we'll have links in our show notes to the registration information for each of those. We'll be offering it in New Ulm, Minnesota at Martin Luther College on June 27th through the 30th. And you can kind of pick and choose which days work for you. We have information out on the web about all the topics that we're covering in each session. We'll duplicate that training in Milwaukee on August 1st through 4th. So hopefully one of those locations will work for you. And if you are a Final Web user, using it to host your church or school website, then perhaps this face-to-face training opportunity is for you. So look for details in the show notes.
Great. Let's move on to feedback.
And we had some interesting discussions this week,
starting
with our LinkedIn group over in the Wells on LinkedIn, which is a social network kind of for professionals, and we have a good Wells group over there. Someone asked the question about movie and video production. Does Wells Tech Podcast create movies? And unfortunately, no, we're not in the business of making movies here at the Wells Tech Podcast, but I was able to point this gal to a couple of people that we're aware of in our Wells circles that do movie production, including Salty Earth Pictures, BT Media, and then someone else shared a link to Highlights Media. So if you are interested in that kind of production, you might want to check out those three different possibilities there. And then we had another interesting discussion over on our Wells Tech listserv where, let's see, Ken Becker from Star of Bethlehem in New Berlin, Wisconsin, posed the question, do you take pictures of random people at your church and use those on your website? And do we need permission if we decide to do that? You know, what kind of policies do you have around that? And that did generate quite a bit of discussion out on the listserv, Martin. And I think very good conversation around different cautions and laws that may apply to that kind of thing. And boy, I'm not an attorney, so it was hard for me to read through all of that and kind of come to a conclusion. I think definitely err on the side of caution, especially when children are involved.
Right.
It's one of the main themes from the conversation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There were a couple of theories out there that I'm not real clear on myself, and I've heard different legal experts actually say different things on this. The whole concept of is a church a public place or not? My understanding, and based on my reading, is that it is a public place, and thus photos can be taken without permission, even if they're taken and then published. The church is not a commercial enterprise either. It is truly a nonprofit, so that there are different rules that apply. But I think in general, the safest practice, regardless of what the law says, and just good public relations, is to make sure that as you publish things, you are getting the appropriate permissions. And I think that's always the wise way to go. This becomes an issue too, Sally, for live streaming, because you are broadcasting in many cases not just the pastor, but people. Whether they're going up for communion or whether you're just doing shots of the of the congregation as they're singing, all of those things are things to consider. And I don't know what you do in your church or whether you publish just a disclaimer, in the church bulletin or whatever, but that is a concern too.
I'm smiling because, for once, it helps to have a bird's eye view. We film from our balcony, and all we get is the back of people's heads from 20 feet away or more. So, I can't say that anybody's real distinguishable except our pastor and our particular video setup. But I know those that use multiple cameras and obviously do probably a much better job with their video production than we do would be getting faces and more close-ups of the members of the church. So, I can see that being an issue.
Absolutely. So just something to think about.
I did appreciate Mike Plucker sharing the student publicity release form from St. Paul's Lutheran School.
Good resource.
So we'll definitely add that to our Wells Tech Wiki along with other notes from this conversation so that it's archived and can be referenced in the future.
Yeah, there's a whole section there on copyright and privacy. So if you've got questions or would like to contribute, even better. That is a great place to go. WellsTechWiki.wells.net is where we're trying to collect all of that information. So be a player there and make sure that you're sharing your knowledge with everybody else so we can all learn.
Absolutely.
The last little bit of community feedback is just a correction. We are not inerrant here on the Wells Tech Podcast, and I mistakenly offered a price for Microsoft Office a few weeks back of about $90, and I was a little unclear at that point because Microsoft pricing is kind of the bane of my existence when it comes to the ShopWells program. But that $90 price tag is for academic pricing, and they distinguish academic from charity pricing. They treat academic pricing a lot, the pricing is a lot lower, a little bit more generous than just raw nonprofit or charity pricing. So we are trying to work through that and find the best deals for everybody. And we're in the process of updating our ShopWell site, in fact, doing a whole redesign. So in the next month or so, hopefully in the next 30 days, you're going to be seeing a whole new ShopWell site that'll really try and lay this out as clearly as possible. What is the best pricing for Microsoft Office or anything else, Adobe, Photoshop, those kinds of things. And then, of course, all the other things in the ShopWell's product line, including Office Depot, Tech Depot, HP Computers, Dell Computers, a Verizon phone plan, and we're actually just negotiating with AT&T now, which is looking pretty good. We just signed a contract with Xerox for copiers, so all kinds of great stuff coming down the line for people that are participating in the ShopWells program. So just sit tight, and we'll let you know when that site is out there.
Sounds great. Well, I think we've talked ourselves blue today, and hopefully everybody feels very showered by our April shower for Webmaster Resources. Next week, we're going to do April showers with Bible teacher resources. So
yeah, and I bet the Glow Bible comes up in there somewhere, too,
yep,
doesn't it?
Better get busy figuring that.
We should make a note that last week's show, I was just looking at the time of the recording here. We hit an hour on the nose last week. So first time we ever did that. Our goal is to be an hour or less. So we just nipped that one. And I don't know if we can ever do that again. But that was a little scary.
Yeah, it just happened that time that and was like, maybe you should change
one
that.
Hour.
Maybe you should add one more second or something. Just
you want 1 hour of us, you had it last week.
Absolutely.
That's all you could take.
Right on the dot.
We're going to be a little bit over an hour this week, but hopefully these resources were valuable, and next week they will be as well. If you are a Bible teacher, tune in next week. Or if you know one, make sure that they're tuning in as well. So spread the word. WellsTech.Wells.net. And give us your feedback. We would love to include more of that on the show, and you have a lot of that good knowledge that I'm sure we can share with the class. So tune in next week. Sally, I think that's going to do it. Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Michelle Williams, her beautiful song, Beautiful Savior, from our album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.